Welcome to Accept Your Gifts, the 22-minute podcast for inspiring your most creative life. My name is Tracy Crow. I'm an author, writing coach, and Marine Corps veteran. I'm looking forward to co-creating today's show with you. So if you're ready, are you ready? I'm ready. So if you're ready to live a more creative, more magical life, let's get started. Welcome back, everyone, to part two of this week's interview with special guest Amanda Riley Sayer. Now, if you recall from episode 24, Amanda is a pediatric psychiatry nurse practitioner. She is also an incredible artist, photographer, and writer. Our paths first crossed last summer when we met at a retreat in Boone, North Carolina. Today, she's going to talk more about her artist process, and in honor of National Poetry Month, Amanda has agreed to read a few of her poems, her haikus. So let's settle in and pick up where we left off at episode 24.
Okay. And so when, as an adult, did you, because you've told me in private that you've never been professionally trained or never, you know, been formally trained as an artist. So at what point, at what age did you finally buy the brushes, buy the paints, and sit down and attempt this?
Well, someone gave me, you know, in high school, a watercolor set that I didn't pull out until college. And at one point in college, I made a watercolor painting, you know, not particularly good, but there was something about doing that resonated for me. I mean, for lack of a better word. And then I would say that probably from that time on, I made like, you know, one or two paintings a year until about, I want to say like 2 or 3 years ago, where somehow it just took off where I was painting. I mean, I paint at least weekly at this point. And I've gradually bought more brushes and paints and things like that. But
Let me stop you. Let me back you up a little bit. So you're late 40s, all of a sudden there's this encouragement or nudge or internal or something. I mean, what was that moment?
I don't know what that moment was. I really don't. I really don't. Like I said, it was, I actually remember where it started. We were vacationing, and, you know, like I said, I had always like painted a couple times a year. I'd pull out the stuff and I'd just be in that zone and I don't even know. And then we were on vacation and I said, you know, I'm having that urge to make a painting, and I didn't have any stuff with me. And so we were going to be there a week. I ordered on Amazon, like a travel, you know, watercolor set and a thing, and got it delivered to the bed and breakfast we were staying at. And because I had a lot of uninterrupted time there, you know, I made several paintings, and I actually think that was the moment where I was like, this is something I want to be doing more than just a couple times a year. And I think that was kind of where it just accelerated exponentially at that point. And then, you know, again, I've been dabbling in acrylic painting and other things. So I would say it's been, you know, much more at the forefront at this point. And I think it's going to continue to be. It seems like a thing.
You know, you mentioned, we were talking trauma earlier, and in transforming from trauma and what gifts we can take from those experiences and how we can use them. Your artwork is so calming and soothing, as we've already discussed. I don't see anything traumatic in anything that you're painting. Do you feel that's because you have transformed from certain traumas? Or can you identify where that trauma is possibly showing up in your paintings that maybe I'm not seeing?
Yeah, no,
you know it.
I think it's a great question. I think, I've never thought about it, but I don't think the trauma shows up in the paintings. But I think that's because, if I, you know, I'm just hypothesizing here, the act of painting is about healing, not about reliving. So that being said, it's important to note this. What you see as the final product of a painting isn't necessarily where it's been. So there are a number of paintings that I've pulled out of the fire, so to speak, that have really not had a very attractive or calming or well put together phase. And some actually go into the fire because it's just like, I can't rescue it. But many of the painting, one of the things that I think is interesting about my own journey as a painter is I know what the story was of every painting. And actually on my blog, sometimes I have shared that with folks, and deliberately so, because I think sometimes people think like, oh, well, you see the finished product and you go, either like it or you don't. But if you like it, you go, well, you know, that must have just come out that way, you know. And I've actually, in some cases, made very explicit the stage before that wasn't so great, and how it sort of evolved to that.
Oh my gosh, Amanda, you've just described an entire metaphor for life. For walking through the fire, through walking through this, for what you're shaping from it and out of it and the various stages of it. You've just provided us this incredibly poignant metaphor for life, period. Thank you.
Well, thanks. I wasn't even aware of what I was saying. So that was actually in the zone. Oh, so it sounds like I did an okay job. But what I'll say is that for me, it's a beautiful thing to be in your journey, to be in one's journey. And if you do it in an honest way, I think what people see on the other side of it usually is something beautiful. If they are also, if they're able to, you know, not everybody is open to that. But I think that, and actually one of the things I love about my work, I don't love all aspects of it, but one thing I do love is watching. It is beautiful to watch somebody grow.
Yes.
It's beautiful. So.
It's beautiful to watch ourselves grow. It's, if we will allow it, wouldn't you say?
Yes. Yeah. So my, you know, one of the things, some of my paintings, especially early paintings, I go, oh, you know, that's not, I still have them on the wall. And, you know, people don't go, ooh, ah, that's such a fantastic painting. But for me, sometimes I keep it on the wall because it's, well, they're all part of me, you know, it's, and they, on some level, they're all sort of a representation of my journey, but also it's, I would say, like a universal human journey about unfolding and becoming and trying to, you know, be our best selves is a way I might say it.
Yeah, you know, and I noticed also on your blog that you have this statement, watercolor encourages me to think about layers and transparency. Mm-hmm. Oh my, what a metaphor.
No, well, you know, I love a metaphor too. My patients actually roll their eyes sometimes at my love of metaphors. Some of them really enjoy it, but yeah, the transparency. Well, I have actually on my blog a story about reclaiming the color purple. And in my early paintings, I used a lot of purple and it wasn't transparent. I mean, it was, there was a lot of sort of dark purple, which I used to cover over mistakes, what I have come to understand. My technique has been better as you get more comfortable with being imperfect. You can more easily allow transparency and layers. And it's much more interesting, actually, than a big blob of one color, right? That you can't see through. But in order to be willing to not have the one big blob of color, you've got to be willing to have people see the imperfections that are there too. I mean, so transparency means being willing to show the imperfections.
Oh, so true. So,
and that's hard. You know, you had asked me before privately about the vulnerability in sharing creative work. And I don't know that people realize, you know, because I have pushed myself to share, I don't know that people would even guess that it feels vulnerable. Because like they might think, well, why do you do it then? Nobody's forcing you to do it. And it is very vulnerable because they are pieces of me that I'm, you know, putting out there. And it doesn't mean I've gotten over the fact that not everybody's going to like everything. I don't need that. That's okay with me. You know, I don't like everything. Actually, some of the stuff I share, I don't even love. You know, honestly, but I'm sharing it sometimes for a different reason than loving it. So that's a whole
different. What might that other reason be, Miss Amanda?
Well, sometimes because there's a metaphor in it. Like, you know, I might say, you know, I don't love the outcome of this painting, but the journey of it was really, really interesting for me. I learned something in the making of this. And so it's meaningful to me. And I'd kind of like to share that. But the other thing is, you know, I mean, I've earned a form of self-love. I think sharing it is a way to love others.
Ooh, and love that.
And so, you know, I mean, I don't know where I heard this, but someone once said, if you like to bake and you make a lot of cookies, but you keep them all to yourself, you're just going to get fat. You know? And so it's sort of like, yeah, I never used to share. I've been painting for, you know, at this point, 30 something years, never shared a painting until about a year ago, 2 years ago, maybe. They're just like, all, you know, hidden away.
Never. Well, let me back you up a second, because you said something very profound a second ago. Well, you've been saying everything profound throughout this, but there was a statement that you made that really grabbed me. And it was this, it was something along the lines of, I've shared this because there's something about the making of this. Could you give us an example, like what one of those making lessons might have been? Was it about the craft itself, or was it something personal?
Let's see. So there's one example I can think of a painting that I started with the sky, and I was pretty attached to the sky. I thought the sky was working. And then I got interrupted, whatever, I was out of the flow. Then I tried to go back to the painting and make a ground that matched the sky, so to speak. You know, there's a metaphor there too, man. Wow.
But
and I couldn't get it. You know, I just could, like, I made some really interesting paintings, but I, you know, none of them were working. And the sky was kind of fixed at that point, you know? And so it was a real labor of, you know, creation and recreation and openness. And finally, I actually was ready at one point to just scrap the whole thing, because I thought I had, and I thought, yeah, I'm just going to run this under the water. It's done. I mean, it's done, but I'm just going to run this under the water. And, the paint was still wet enough, and it was painted on a material that was forgiving with the water. Anyway, all the stars aligned, and the paint washed off and left that original sky pretty much intact. And it was like, I had another chance. And anyway, finally, I sort of pulled it off, and it was, it's not my favorite painting. I don't love the colors of it. There's a lot I don't love about it. I don't want it in my house hanging. Someone else might, some people liked it. I mean, actually, some people were like, oh, I love that one. I love the, you know, that's the other thing about art that's really interesting is, you know, what one person likes, another person doesn't. And what might be my favorite painting, nobody else seems to love, you know, who cares? You know, so I've kind of worked through that. But anyway, that's an example.
You also say on your blog, and by the way, listeners, please go check out this amazing blog. But you also say on here, and I'm going to quote you, photography helps me focus on composition and light. Poetry trains me to be succinct and thoughtful about word choice. There is always a risk of doing too much, of diluting quality. Okay. Mm-hmm. Madam Amanda, explain some of this.
Well, I mean, first of all, I think there are lots of ways of seeing, you know. Yeah. So, and different media or opportunities we have allow us to strengthen an aspect of seeing, you know, because looking is not seeing.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
Listening's not hearing.
Right.
So we really, if you want to really hone those skills to be able to see things in truth, for me anyway, the idea of having multiple ways at coming at it help strengthen my ability, I think. That's kind of what that meant to me. I can also be wordy. I mean, I hope I'm not being too wordy on this podcast, but I can be wordy in
not
my writing. So poetry really, and haiku in particular, so structured. That's really a good discipline for someone who can be overly wordy to kind of get to the point.
Well, let's talk about these haikus because they're amazing. Now, haiku, for our listeners who aren't super familiar with this poetry form, 3 lines, 17 total syllables, if my poetry writing professor part of me is coming out. Okay. It's a Japanese poetry form. And yes, the first line is 5, mm-hmm, the second line is 7, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then the third line, and it usually has a connection to nature, usually, but not necessarily in maybe our more modern way. Well, so do you do these haikus as this method of training to be succinct?
Well, I think it's turned out to be that. I don't even know how I even thought about a haiku. I mean, you know, I also took high school English, or it was probably, you know, it's probably elementary school English when you learn haiku. I don't remember, honestly, and I don't remember when it first occurred to me to write a haiku as an adult, but it seemed to be a thing I was doing. Kind of like with the painting where like every, you know, year I would write a haiku in my head, you know. And usually how it goes for me is the first line is just, I wouldn't say it comes to me like, you know, like I'm grabbing it out of the air, but it sometimes feels that way, you know, where I'm taking a walk and I have a thought that seems like the first line of a haiku. And then I count the syllables and I'm like, oh yeah, that's 5. Or that's 6, so how could I make that 5? Or that's, you know.
Right.
And then, so usually the first line is coming from some experience that I'm having. And then often the next 2 lines just, you know, I figure that out. And sometimes they come quickly and, you know, I have to add a line or take away a word to make the syllables come out. But yeah, the haiku have been kind of an interesting, funny.
Oh, I love them. Listen, it is, April is National Poetry Month. So awesome. Would you be willing to share a couple of your haikus with us right now?
Oh boy, you're going to test my reading skills. I can try. So, well, you know, yeah, this will be fun to share because I think, well, what I guess I'm not sure. My idea about this is that they add words to sometimes what I'm trying to communicate with painting and in my psychiatric nurse practitioner work and everything. So it's just, I think you'll find that it's kind of consistent. So what do I want to say? How do I want to do this? So my first one, and this one is my own inspiration. So I'll start with this one, but it goes like this. Be as the lighthouse, your beacon call inspiring. Let yourself be seen.
Oh, nice. And then as we do it, poetry to gatherings, we snap our fingers. Snap, 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 snap. It'll clap.
So, yeah. So let yourself be seen, people. It's a struggle for me to let myself be seen, but this is all part of it.
Read another one.
All right. How about this one? This is the most recent one. Beyond the known lies, a blank canvas for your dreams. Paint outside the lines.
Snap, 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 snap. How about another one?
You want one more? Because I know which one I want to end on.
Okay. Well, then read two more.
All right. Well, this is a good one. This will be inspiring for my people that are struggling. Even a sliver, moon or bowl of pinprick stars, illumines darkness. Even a sliver.
Oh, love it. Love it. Love it. Love it. Love it. Love it.
And here's my last one. Okay.
Is this your favorite one? This last one?
I have a painting that goes with this one, so it's connected to the painting, which is, I don't know if it's my favorite, but it's one I like a lot. Eternal light pools reflect your perfect essence, the divine as you.
Okay, now that one's gonna get to be. That's my favorite!
I they're all part of me, but I do like that one because I think this idea of being seen, of having the right mirrors, of being able to see ourselves well, you know, past the distortions that have been put upon us from our life experiences, you know, all the grime that's collected upon us that makes it hard for us to see ourselves as light and to see ourselves in truth. That particular haiku sort of captures a bunch of those ideas for me that something that drives my poetry, my painting, my stuff. So.
Well, Amanda, can't thank you enough for being with us here today on Accept Your Gifts. You're certainly a gift to me in my life and now a gift to all of our listeners. And I just appreciate you so much. Thank you.
Well, the feeling is absolutely mutual, Tracy. Thank you so much. And for sharing this gift, I've been like just every one of these podcasts has taught me something. So it's a tough bar. And I hope I've done an all right job, but
you just raised the bar for all of us. Thank you, sweetheart.
Thank you, Tracy.
I hope you enjoyed today's co-creative listening experience. Please remember to leave a comment about the single greatest takeaway for you today. You know, that one thing you will remember from this day forward. Was it something funny or provocative? Was it just what you needed to hear? Please share so we can all benefit. And remember to return Tuesdays and Thursdays to Accept Your Gifts, the 22-minute podcast for inspiring your most creative life.